Hello, and welcome to My Streaming Bubble, that podcast where I talk about the shows I love with the people I tolerate. I'm your host, Jen, and what a treat it is to welcome back my lovely podcast brain twin, Erin from It's a Fandom Thing podcast, because she tricked me, not really, into watching a horror movie I've never seen from beginning to end. The 1978 classic, the first in a franchise that just won't die, John Carpenter's Halloween. Hello, lovely podcast brain twin Erin from It's a Fandom Thing podcast.
Hello, Jen. Oh, that tricked me.
I said I was joking. Yes.
I know. It's funny. But hello, thank you for having me on to talk about this. I'm very nervous and excited. Because I don't know what you think yet, so I'm very nervous.
Oh, I know. I love it so much. I'm so excited. So like I said, Erin is the host of It's a Fandom Thing podcast. If you've listened to past episodes before, you will know that we are frequent guests on each other's shows. And a quick little announcement is that we will be starting our joint podcast. The internet has decided to name it Twin It to Win It. And just to clarify, we are not twins, although no. I know it can be very deceiving when you actually see us. Like, oh,
look exactly alike. It's amazing.
So make sure you're following both of our podcasts on Twitter and Facebook and all the socials and everything. We'll give those at the end of the episode. And so you can get all the updates and know when that podcast starts. So I'm very, very excited. And I feel like this episode is a great kind of prequel to what's going to be coming. So, all right. And like I said, we'll get more details later. Okay. Let's see. Where am I now? Yes. So as I'm sure everyone and their sister knows, this movie stars Scream Queen and just a queen in general, Jamie Lee Curtis, Donald Pleasance, Tony Moran, Nancy Keys, PJ Souls, just to name a few. It's free on Redbox, Plex, and Crackle, rentable from other streaming services, but most importantly, it is free at your local library. So in case we need a spoiler warning slash brief synopsis of a movie that's just a little bit older than I am, what IMDb says is 15 years after murdering his sister on Halloween night, 1963, Michael Myers escapes from a mental hospital and returns to the small town of Haddonfield, Illinois to kill again. And what I says, I think I'm a little late to this Halloween party.
I don't know how to take that. I'm like, I do want to add, you can also watch this on Shudder. I do want to.
Oh, and Shudder.
Because for some reason, Shudder, if you're like looking where to find, for some reason, it doesn't always show up when you're on Google and stuff like that. But I was checking yesterday because I have it. Of course, I own a physical copy, but I didn't really. It's a long story having to do with something that's boring, but I didn't want to dig it out at this point. So I was like, is it somewhere where I don't have to watch commercials? And it's on Shudder. So. Gotcha. And Shudder is a fairly cheap and wonderful service. If you're a horror fan and you're not subscribed to Shudder, what are you doing with your life?
But, exactly. Anyway. And I'm kind of surprised, and maybe it's just, you know, licensings or whatever, but because Tubi is completely free. It does have commercials, but it has a pretty impressive selection of horror movies. Mm-hmm. So, but, and then I noticed on Plex that because it's got all of the Halloweens, that you can build like a collection and then shuffle watch them. And I'm like, I have been asking for a shuffle feature for like TV series for fucking years. And here Plex has it for movies. Super jealous.
Why am I jealous? I don't know. So cool, especially with Halloween, because Halloween, I like to say, is a choose your own adventure, because there are different timelines. You can do whatever timeline you choose. And like, there's like, that's why I always say when people complain about the newest Halloween movies, especially the last one, Halloween Ends, people, you know, that's a very divisive film. And when people complain about that, I'm like, well, you can always choose a different adventure. That's the thing about, that's why people have problems with the Halloween sequels, is because they're all over the map and some of them are so bad. And I totally understand. But it is one of those where you can choose your own adventure. So I like that shuffling. So you could be like, oh, I'm going down this path. And then all of a sudden you're going to down a different, the druid thing or whatever that one path was. But
what? Oh my God. Yeah, it definitely seems like fun. I think maybe because I haven't seen, like, this is only my second Halloween movie I've ever watched. The first Halloween movie I ever saw from beginning to end was H2O, the 20th anniversary one. And when I told my husband that, he's like, oh, so the worst one?
The only one No. That would be like six, in my opinion. Oh. Or people give H2O a hard time. I actually think H2O is a good one. It would be the one immediately following it. That's the, I can't remember, but it has, it's one where Lori, quote unquote, dies. And it's right after H2 and it's awful. But I think H2O gets too much of a bad rap. I actually really like H2O. I think it's an interesting, it's kind of similar in what it's examining to Halloween 2018 and that whole that timeline where they basically forgot about all the sequels to Halloween. It's similar in that where you are looking at Laurie's trauma, but H2O is still following the timeline of that gets presented in Halloween 2, where Laurie is his sister, which was not anything John Carpenter ever really wanted. John Carpenter didn't want any sequels to this movie, period. But so
I was kind of wondering about that because of how the first one, you know, how this one ends. Like, was this like planned to at least have a one or two more? So that's interesting. And I didn't look up any fun facts because I'm like, well, I know this is Erin's favorite movie, so I'm sure she's got all the fun facts.
Favorite horror movie, but
favorite horror movie. Yes. Sorry. So, all right. So we'll go ahead and get right into it. And so, as I said, this is your favorite movie. I'm guessing that's probably why you picked this one for me to watch, considering, as I said, I have not seen this movie from beginning to end ever. So, and your general thoughts and how much you love it.
Well, yes, I did pick it for you because when you said that, it was like Michael's knife to my heart. This is my favorite horror film. I collect Michael Myers merch. And as weird as that may sound, I have like over 20 things of I have like a Michael Myers head that does the theme song. I have like a Welcome to Haddon. So some of the stuff isn't just Michael Myers. It's like Halloween related, but I have a stuffed Michael Myers doll. I have a one of those, like, you know, those, one of those prayer candle things.
Yeah, the Saint.
Yes, thank you. It has Michael Myers on it. I have shirts. I won't list it, all this stuff. I have a cutting board.
Love it. That's like a little too perfect.
Yeah, that was a gift, but I do want, there's this one that you can get that's like a knife set. Like, you get a set, a knife that has like his face on it. Really want that.
Ooh. But,
yeah. So when I heard you hadn't, I was like, how have you not seen this movie? It was like one of those where I was like, I have to get Jen to watch this somehow. And then eventually it became this. But, you know, this wasn't always my favorite horror movie. It used to be A Nightmare on Elm Street. And then it's so weird. And I don't know. I don't think necessarily this is a more mature movie. I just, when I got older, this became my favorite. And I think it's because, you know, of course it's groundbreaking. It started a lot of things that was not the intent of anyone behind it. This is like one of the most successful this was an independent movie. This was made for like no money. And this is one of the most successful independent movies ever made. And I think what I like about it is I think people have this misconception that because it's a slasher film, it's one of the first slasher films, that it's extremely violent. This movie is not very violent at all. There's hardly any blood, hardly any gore. Michael doesn't always kill. Like, you have a lot of scenes where you see Michael like he runs into somebody, doesn't kill him, all this stuff. And having Michael B, and this changed a lot with sequels, but having Michael B basically just evil personified. And John Carpenter said it was essential that nobody relate to Michael Myers when you watch this one, that nobody feel anything for him. That's why he has a problem with, like, say, the Rob Zombie Halloween movies, because Rob Zombie tries to give a backstory that he was, you know, raised in an abusive home and all this stuff. And anyway, and I know it broke Rob Zombie's heart when John Carpenter was
saying,
but I mean, you're messing with the most important part to John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And I also just think this fits in. When I was in film school, I did write a paper on Halloween against the hero's journey, so following Laurie. And so, yes, this does, and this was not at all John Carpenter's intent, this does start that whole trend of, oh, if you're a good girl, you survive. If you have mm-hmm. sex, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not John Carpenter's intent at all. It just happened that way. But when you watch the movie, it's not like Laurie is like wanting to be like virginal. She just is studious, mm-hmm. but she also smokes pot. Mm-hmm. She also is very boy crazy. She's mm-hmm. also, she's very much a teenage girl. And Jamie Lee Curtis was the only actress that actually was a teenager when they filmed this,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's funny when you watch this now, you're like, she looks like she's like 25, mm-hmm. but she was a teenager.
I did see that she was an actual, she was the only one that was actually a teenager. And I'm kind of like, the first time I sat down and watched it, because I watched it a couple of times to prep for today. So, but I was like, you know, I'm like, oh, they're all obviously in their 20s. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay. All right. Fun facts.
Yeah. And I think it's fun. It never gets old. I watch it every year on Halloween, which I know is really cheesy and cornball to choose that day to watch it, except for, of course, I watched it for this. But I just, it's just a tradition I do. It doesn't necessarily mean I won't watch the sequels and other ones at different times. And like I said, the choose your own adventure with the whole franchise as a whole, which I know we're not going to talk about that. I just think that's kind of interesting. I do think people didn't really know quite what to do with Halloween, and what John Carpenter and a lot of people wanted to do with this is start. And that's why Halloween 3 is like, I don't know if you know about Halloween 3. Halloween 3 has nothing to do with Michael Myers, and it's totally a different kind of movie. And what they wanted to do was do like a universe, like a Halloween universe, where it'd be different things happening in each movie. And that's kind of what Halloween 3 is, Season of the Witch, which has become a beloved movie, which is what I think is going to end up happening with Halloween Ends. But that's just my opinion. And I just think Michael Myers as a villain is really terrifying because, number one, while I love Freddy, I think the fact that Michael Myers doesn't speak is scary. The mask is terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. The fact that, you know, and it's funny at times too, but the fact that walks like so slow, like he's not in any hurry to do this because he's pretty confident he's going to be able to kill you. And his whole mindset is just killing. He doesn't have anything else in mind. It's not like he has some big reason to do it either. It's just, he's just driven to do that. Although I did think it was interesting watching it this time, and I don't know why I've never really taken note of this, is that he's always puts a mask on. Even when he was a kid and he killed his sister, he puts a mask on. And you see it the time that, you know, Laurie takes off the mask towards the end, and he immediately puts it back on. Mm-hmm. So it's like he kind of feels, so it's like he feels more powerful with that mask on or something. And it's not like he hasn't killed people without it, but he usually wears just the mask. So mm-hmm. anyway, that was a lot of rambling, I feel. But I just love it. I think it holds up. I think it's a ton of fun. I think it's, I like that it's not as violent as people think it is. And the score is,
mm-hmm.
I think, the best score ever for a horror movie, hands down. And that's all John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. And also shout out to Deborah Hill, who co-wrote this, and that's a woman. And I just, and she wrote all the dialogue for all the female characters. So,
mm-hmm. yep, I saw that too on IMDb. I was like, ooh, neat. Way to go, 1978. Like, so like I said, I watched this movie several times in preparation for today. And like I said, I've never seen it from beginning to end. I've seen it on all of like the horror movie countdown, specials, shows, and stuff like that. And I can appreciate its place in pop culture history and what it has done for horror movies. But I think because I saw it at 42, I found it so much more funnier than scary. And I loved it. I had a blast watching this, even though I'm like, nothing is really quote scary because it's a quote old movie. I guess I don't need quotes, but I'm putting it in quotes because it's only a year older than I am, or a couple years older than I am. So, but I can see that how it was kind of shocking and scary for its time. I get that. Like I said, I can appreciate that. But I just thought Michael Myers, so dramatic and so fucking extra, dude. Oh my God. Like, digging up a headstone and then propping it up in the house and like setting up all the bodies and everything.
He's a
Like,
trickster.
he's a trickster. And I love the dedication to the craft. Like, that is respectable. Like, I know I'm not supposed to like him, but I'm like, you know what? You're fast. You're slow, but you're also fast. And which is pretty terrifying. And I just love that he's going to go above and beyond what he needs to scare the shit out of people and murder them. For me, I think the scariest moment or the most unsettling moment with Michael was after he kills, I don't know, the one dude with the glasses. I can't keep anyone's name straight, so I apologize. But the guy who hooked up with PJ Soul's character, is that Bob? But
That's not Bob.
oh,
That's
okay.
wait, let me just Aaron. You should know this stuff more than anyone else.
You're on
How
the
am I
spot.
forgetting his name? I know. I'm like totally like feeling dumb. Anyway, I have a feeling I know what you're gonna say, but
But yeah, when he
yeah, it is
kills
Bob Doy.
that,
Golly.
okay. But yeah, so when he kills Bob and he lifts him up and he's against lifts lifts him up against like the pantry door or whatever, and then stabs him with just like, I mean, that's a hell of a fucking kitchen knife because it holds the body up, and which is kind of silly and funny in of itself. But then you get that shot of Michael Myers just slowly tilting his head. And there's something really, really unsettling about that, whether it's him kind of admiring his work or just kind of like, huh, look at you. Look at you now with all those,
Look at you now.
all those impure, dirty sex thoughts out of your head now. And then when he goes up to PJ Soul's character's room and he's got the sheet and the glasses. Such a theatrical man. I love it. So I had a lot of fun with this movie. And like I said, I may have been a little late to the Halloween party in that I don't know that I can love it and appreciate it and really talk about it and critique it as well as other super fans can and have done. But it's still just a really good time. And I'm glad I finally watched it.
Well, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And I think that's fine not to get scared by it. Like, it doesn't scare me anymore. It really doesn't. I do find some parts of the more recent ones, which I'm a huge fan of the David Gordon Green prequel or whatever. I'm a fan of those. John Carpenter's a fan of those. I think they're really well done. I understand why people don't like the last one. I do get it. But there was like even like a go like a change.org petition to refilm the whole,
Oh
reshoot the
my
whole thing.
Lord.
And I don't want to spoil it for you, Jen, because I would be curious if you were to watch those, if you were to watch Halloween and then Halloween Kills and then Halloween Ends, those three. I would be very curious to hear your thoughts on that and if any of that stuff scares you, because I do think there are some scary elements to those. And Halloween Kills is probably, as far as like in this timeline, is one of the most violent violent Halloween movies. It's extremely gory. And my opinion is, I think it's all because it's all from the point of view of Michael. In my opinion, that's what that movie's supposed to be about. I'm not saying there aren't other people in it, but because there are, and I don't want to get too into it because that's what we're talking about. But I do understand, like, if I had just watched this movie now, it would not scare me. But because I had seen it, I don't even know how old I was, but I'd seen it at a younger age. And to me, it was scarier because I think the 70s and horror films in the 70s are generally bleaker in some respects, mm-hmm. because movies back then were bleaker anyway, a lot of them. And so I think it's bleaker, and the score, I think, is part of it. And there is trivia that when they first showed this movie without the score, the people they showed it to were like, this is not scary at all. This mm-hmm. is, there's nothing scared, terrifying. And then the same people watched it with the score and they were terrified. And there were people watching in the theater and they'd cover their ears because the score. Music is essential in a horror mm-hmm. film, period. Absolutely. Sound plays a big role. But I do like the fact, and I think people forget about it, and they remembered it in the David Gordon Green timeline, but they forget that Michael is a trickster. Michael isn't just like, he kind of has a sixth sense of humor, but he is a trickster. And the thing of, and I agree, the scenery does kill Bob and he tilts his head, is freaky because it's this moment where he is like, you don't know, is he admiring his work? Is he like fascinated to watch how somebody's body reacts after they're killed, or mm-hmm. what is that? Mm-hmm. And he does it quite a lot throughout the franchise. Oh, it's like okay. a signature thing of Michael Myers.
Cool. That
head tilt. So anyway, yeah, but I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I was really worried. I was like, I really hope she actually enjoys it. I really didn't think you'd get scared. I'm not surprised you didn't get scared. Yeah. I didn't think you'd get scared, but
Yeah, no, it was still a good time. And, you know, and I wonder too what my relationship and how I would feel about this movie had I seen it at a younger age. Because as we've discussed, I saw Nightmare at 5. I can't remember how old I was when I saw Friday the 13th, but I was definitely younger, where there were definitely parts where I was like, ugh. So yeah, my relationship with this movie, had I watched it years ago, might be different, but that's quite all right because I enjoy it for what it is and for what it's done. And it's fun. It's funny. It makes me laugh. And I'm always down for just a good time. And that's exactly what I had here. So out of all the times you have rewatched this, is there a scene or a moment that still kind of gets you?
Well, other than the Bob one that we've talked about, and just because I think it's done so well and so many horror movies would copy it afterwards. And yes, it's been done before, but the scene where Laurie is outside the room, she's sitting there, she's crying, she's upset. She does feel like maybe she has defeated, like she's standing outside, you know, and then you see Michael rise up slowly. Mm-hmm. It's the rising up slowly where it's not like, all of a sudden he's there. It's that slow rise. And that's the thing about Michael Myers, is it's that slowness is kind of scarier than the fastness, because you don't know what to expect. And if people aren't really fine-tuned, their hearing isn't tuned in, or they're not looking behind them, they're not going to know he's sneaking up on you. And so she feels like she's okay, and she's taking this moment to cry and sob. And then all of a sudden, there he is, you know, mm-hmm. rising up and coming. And you're yelling at the screen saying, you know, look behind you. He's coming. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's there with mm-hmm. the knife. So that to me, and the closet.
Yeah.
When she's in the closet, I just think that's iconic. Anyway, I'm just going through and, you mm-hmm. know, and it's been recreated numerous times. And mm-hmm. so, yeah.
Yeah, see, it feels like a standard kind of almost in like horror movies, and like especially those tiny little closet doors. Yeah. Like, I get like, you know, you're in a panic and you're hiding, but you're hiding behind one of the weakest doors, door structures possible. And I love it so much. I also love the part where, after Michael comes out from the shadows and goes to stab Lori and only hits her arm and tears her shirt, which kind of makes me wonder because he's missed a couple of times with her. Where is he just kind of like a cat and mouse kind of thing where he's just fucking with her? Because I'm like, how could you miss both those times? But, and I forgot where I was going with my original point. But yeah, so that's why I was wondering if this was, if it was planned to be any kind of sequels, and that, because knowing that they're going into this, knowing that, you know, we find out later that they're related, it's like, okay, so he's, it's his sister and maybe he knows that and he's fucking with her, but clearly not. That was none of it, not planned, unintentional.
No, John Carpenter hates that that happened. I think. So, and a lot of people, you know, they did away with that in the 2018 one, that sequel. That's no longer the case. So
interesting. So yeah, let's see. What else have I got here? Because like I said, I rambled to the point where I forgot where I was going. That happens. And with regards to the score and John Carpenter, I agree. Sound, music really helps to, is very important in setting the tone for horror movies. And, you know, like the theme song is iconic and everyone knows it. My kids know it. They've got it on like the family Halloween playlist that we have on Spotify. Because I have seasonal holiday playlists for us. So everyone knows it. And to actually see it and hear it in the movie definitely does build that tension and kind of gets you going. And it made me think of, you know, obviously The Thing, and John Carpenter does the score for that, because the last time I watched it, where I kind of picked up on the score as in the opening sequence of The Thing, the helicopters flying and everything, the beat kind of feels like a heartbeat. And for some reason I had tuned into that. And then it felt like it was like my anxiety started kicking up. Like my heart, I don't know, was starting to beat along with it. And I'm like, what is happening? So I agree. I love it. And, you know, there's now talks that there might be a, John Carpenter might be doing a sequel to his The Thing. And so I've seen the jokes about like, he's back in, heading back to the recording studio and going to start creating the music. And that got me a little more excited than him actually possibly doing a sequel, because I was like, oh, we get new music. Creepy music. I love it.
I adore John Carpenter, and I think, you know, he's, it, to me, it, both him and Wes Craven are like the grandfather, the godfathers of horror. Mm-hmm. And I know there are other ones, of course, as well. I'm not saying there aren't people out there, because there are, but for me and for my generation, I think too, they really were. And John Carpenter to me is kind of like a, you know, I mean, he still smokes. I'm not encouraging people to smoke, but he still smokes. He's like kind of like the anti-Hollywood filmmaker. He fits horror so well, and that's not all he's done, but he fits horror so well because of how anti-establishment he feels to me. And that's what I love about him. And I think he does, and he does like all of the scores for his stuff. So I think he knows how to add that music to fit. And I think with this one, it's almost like you can almost hear with some of the, like, you know, harshness in some of the chords, like almost like a knife strike, you could even say. And so, yeah.
Yeah. So with this movie, you know, because it's, you know, 78, we get a little bit of boobies and half naked women being murdered or orgasming. It was kind of hard to tell a couple of times. So that made me giggle, because I was like, oh, this takes me back. These hilarious and sexy death scenes.
Or orgasming.
So that's okay. So even though it wasn't his intention, as you said, how this plays into the whole kind of good girl, final girl. And if you have relations, you're going to get murdered. So since that wasn't really, quote, the intention, although it's kind of hard, because even watching it now for the first time, it feels like that was maybe a not so subtle message. But so what was his intent? Like, did he have one with the Lori character, other than she's just maybe slightly more responsible because she's going to fulfill her babysitting duties before going out and trying to hook up with Ben Tram or whoever that she's got that little crush on.
Benjamin Tramer.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's ever really said necessarily, and I'm trying to think, and probably people are yelling at me right now, but you have to excuse me. I also had a long week, so my brain is completely dead. But I don't know if there was necessarily an intent. I just think, I mean, he's very much also doing an homage to Hitchcock in a way by casting Jamie Lee Curtis, because this was Jamie Lee Curtis's first big, huge role. And if you don't know who Jamie Lee Curtis's parents are, it's Janet Lee and Tony Curtis. And Janet Lee, of course, famously was in Psycho and murdered in that, and was the really is thought of as the original Scream Queen because of that scene. Mm-hmm. And so I think more his intent was just to make a movie with no budget, try and get it as scary as possible, and kind of play into, I think, into kind of that that pure evil killer. I don't know. I'm totally not speaking very eloquently about that, but I think the reason I say is that I don't think he ever really intentionally sought out to be like, okay, you're not going to have sex. I think what it was, and it could be him who said this or someone else, is that the reason it's set up that way is Laurie is not distracted by these guys. She is totally solely focused on babysitting. This is originally called The Babysitters. This is not called Halloween. It's called The Babysitter Murders, or yeah, and which is a stupid, dumbass title, if you ask me. I'm sorry. I'm so glad it never, ever stuck with that, because I don't know how they would have, I don't think it would have played as, yeah, The Babysitter Murders was originally what it was called. So it was more focused on that, of babysitting and vulnerability. And this is also, I mean, it's not quite Gen X where you know, the kids are taking care of themselves kind of thing. But I think his more thing was like, she's so focused and intent on these children and taking care of the children, and she's kind of like the person who's the studious one, and these other girls and women, girls and their boyfriends that are there, well, Bob, are distracted by their teenage hormones, so they're not paying attention. But even if you watch this, the scene where she is talking, she's talking on the phone, and she's talking about, you know, her crush with Ben, and how, you know, her friend's like, oh, well, I called him, and you're gonna, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Tommy, who comes back later on throughout this different timelines, but especially in the most recent one, Tommy is like looking and sees Michael and is trying to get her attention. And so this is the time when she's distracted by her hormones in a way. I don't think, you know, maybe there was a part of him that subconsciously was like talking about how sex can be a distraction, your hormones can be a distraction. But I think it's also just teenagers are so easily distracted and dealing with a lot. And so I don't know. I don't know if that made any sense, what I just said. Did.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But
no, because it's just kind of interesting that it wasn't, hearing that it wasn't his intent, but how it really kind of set that standard almost for horror movies to come, especially in the later 70s and the 80s and everything. And then, of course, it almost feels like, and maybe it's because of Scream, but a little bit parodied, but not like in a making fun of way, but in more of an homage way of carrying that through through later horror movies, and how that's almost like a staple, a standard, you know. It's like, just like you have like with the cabin in the woods and five different character types all going up there, and it's still the good girl or the good guy, you know, not engaging in relations. So it's just so interesting. I love that he just, if John Carpenter was just set out to just make a movie, and how it changed and really set the stage for everything to come later is just fucking amazing. And I think that is very very telling to the storytelling and the even like the acting and the direction and the directing of this movie. Because otherwise, if it was just another kind of scary movie and people were like, oh yeah, that was pretty good, I enjoyed that, it wouldn't have had the impact that it has had. So let's see what else. Oh, kind of real quick, so when they're walking through, when the detective, whatever, Loomis is going through the graveyard with the graveyard guy.
He's not a detective, though.
Oh, he's not a detective. He's a doctor.
Doctor.
That's mm-hmm. right. He says that several times. He's his doctor. Sorry.
No.
Because he was working with the cop who was Annie's dad.
Okay. Yes.
But yeah, so Loomis and the graveyard guy are going through the graveyard. And the graveyard guy starts telling the story and he never finishes it. Is there an end to that story? Because I need to know.
I love that it was never finished because it's really, I mean, you never know, but I would assume what happened is he went in there and he killed his whole family with that.
Sure.
That's how I finish it. But I love that he doesn't get to finish it because it's so funny because Dr. Loomis is just like, I don't give a fuck about this fucking story. I am trying to get Michael, don't you understand? Because Dr. Loomis is an icon in this franchise. And I mean, rest in peace, Donald Pleasance. Honestly, these movies would not work without Michael Myers, of course, but they would not work without Dr. Loomis, these earlier ones, and especially the first one. And that's what's so funny to me about that scene is it's like anybody else would be like, oh my God, and waiting. And he's just like, you know what? I don't have time for this. Okay. You don't understand. I'm dealing with pure evil here. I'm dealing with the devil is basically almost what he attributes Michael to because this is an obsession of his. Michael Myers is honestly an obsession. I mean, this is 15 years of his life, 8 years wanting to communicate with him, 7 years wanting to keep him locked up. That's a hell of a commitment. So it is funny. He's just like, I don't care. I don't care about all these other people getting hacked up. What does that have to do with me and Michael Myers? That's what I'm hearing about.
It made me laugh because it kind of reminded me of like a child and a parent where the child is rambling on about whatever the hell. And it's like really cool and fascinating to them. But the parent slash Loomis is just like, oh my God, we have to get to the grocery store and we've got to run to the fucking Target. And then we got to stop here. I don't have time for this. Oh, look, here we are.
Yep.
So that was, I like these little bits of comedy kind of sprinkled throughout, whether intentional or not, because like I said, I found some things funny, like Lori falling down or, you know, when she falls over the railing and lands like a cat on the stairs. That was very impressive. Oh, all right. So what are some of the other things that you just love about this movie or any other rants, raves, faves, fan gush, anything like that you have to add, I'm sure.
Well, I do think the stalking element to this, because Michael is pretty much stalking Lori throughout this movie. And I mean, her first seeing it in the car and then seeing the car outside of school and then seeing Michael and her yard and then, you know, seeing Michael behind a bush. And I mean, and these are scenes that have been replicated and replicated, and I think they're great and wonderful. I love them. And then, you know, what I also appreciate is that when she does get that call from Annie and she thinks it's this person stalking her, I appreciate they didn't make it be Michael, because I mean, first of all, how would Michael know her number? And how would, you know, unless you're going to go through the sister timeline, then I guess maybe he did or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just so interesting him stalking and not instantly killing, because a lot of times in slasher films, it's all about just the villain will just kill anybody that's there in the way usually, and they don't always stalk. I mean, that's not, of course, always the case. Like, I think Ghostface to an extent stalks as well, and Freddy likes to play with his food, for lack of, and that sounds really awful, but it just feels like that sometimes.
He totally does.
So But I still to this day think it's creepier that it took forever to get to that point, and where he was doing a lot of quote unquote stalking of her. And it was almost like that was part of his ritual, was the stalking part. Because in a way, even when you see him as a boy, he's kind of in a way stalking his sister. I mean, he waits, he doesn't kill the boyfriend, he just kills his sister. And the worst parents in the world are just stand there when you say your kids.
Oh my god, no shit.
That scene always just, it just gets me. I'm like, okay.
And the mom just stands there and puts her hands in her coat pocket, like, well, here we go.
What'd you do this time, Michael? And I was like, you know, he never spoke since then. Let me get to my notes here. I know that I'm missing something here. And I know I already spoke about the mask, but that just really hit me more this time with the mask and becoming his true self. Cause I don't think he puts the mask on because he doesn't want to see what he's doing. I think he puts it on because, I don't know, I think he feels more powerful with it for some reason. And so it's just interesting to me that he always wants to have a mask on, and maybe wants to cover his own face. I don't know. There's probably deeper psychological readings into that that people maybe do, but I just always find that fascinating. And it's probably part of his ritual, his own ritual of killing, is having that mask on. And I think it's interesting if you're looking at it and you're following the timeline where they're not related, or they're not related to each other. It's interesting to me that it's almost like he went home and he wants to go back home. He wants to be back in his house where he was before. And that's his main mission. And then he gets distracted by this girl. And then he's like, well, now my main mission is to kill her and anybody else around her. And he becomes very laser focused on her. And you can almost make a parallel between Michael Myers and Dr. Loomis in their absolute obsession with something. Because Michael Myers is, and even in the David Gordon Green timelines where they're not related, Michael is so, so laser focused on Laurie. It becomes like an obsession. And that's kind of the way it is in this, is he's laser focused on her. She's going to be like the dessert, and all these other people are what's leading up to that. And for Dr. Loomis, he's so laser focused on Michael Myers that he's not thinking about like another story of murder. And he's not thinking about, he doesn't really even care about the town so much, even though he claims he does. I think what his sole purpose and sole goal is to get Michael Myers off the street. And he feels like, he almost has this, like, I don't want to call it a God complex because I really like Dr. Loomis, but I think he has like this complex of like, I'm the only one who can save this town, which a lot of people put that on him. But then people also like, he unjustly gets blamed for Michael Myers escaping. That was not Dr. Loomis's fault. Mm-hmm. He did not let him go. He was doing everything in his power to keep him locked up. Mm-hmm. And it still bugs me to this day that Annie's dad is like, well, then curse you for letting, like, he didn't let him go. He had nothing to do with that. He didn't want to. He wants him like dead.
They pulled up and he was out. Like, they pulled up.
This is me off to this day that he gets blamed for that. It's not his fault.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me that you could almost make a parallel between the two of them where their end goals almost match in some weird, sick way, in a way. Mm-hmm. And then it's interesting through the sequels watching Dr. Loomis and his obsession continue and continue and continue, because he's so obsessed with Michael Myers. That's his whole focus. Can you imagine being in a relationship with that guy where all he does is Michael Myers?
No. And it's like, you know, I'm good with true crime for the most part, but not to be married to it. Because that's what it would be, I would think. So. No, that's really interesting. I'm glad that you pointed that out because I didn't notice it, but it's absolutely there, because it is kind of like, then why, what is the obsession with with Lori for Michael. Like, we get the obsession for Loomis and trying to get Michael back and everything. And that totally makes sense. And he does. And I feel like because after Michael gets out and steals the nurse's car, which I don't know if she ever reported it stolen, but I feel like that could have saved some time. But Loomis is at like the police station or whatever. And he's talking to the one guy as they're exiting the building. And the guy's just kind of like, whatever. It's not a big deal. And, you know, there's no way he's going to get all the way to Haddonfield. It's too far away and this and that. And so fucking dismissive. So I get that Loomis kind of at this point maybe now feels like I'm the only one that can save this city. Very,
yeah.
Sorry, very vigilante. But yeah, I like that. I like, yeah. Good call out.
Because it, I mean, it's true because that it is like, and you could look at Michael's obsession with Lori as more in the later ones. I mean, taking the sister part out of it, but you could look at it also as she's the one who gets away. And so then he becomes obsessed with her in that way. And through the timelines, Lori dies, Liz dies. So it's all messed up, of course. But you could look at it that way too, is that I think, especially if you take the adventure of David Gordon Green's timeline that it becomes in Halloween 2018, it's like his obsession has been the reason I am where he is when that movie opens is because of Lori. So my obsession is going to become Lori and anyone else that gets in my way. I don't care. And Lori almost becomes like Dr. Loomis in a way, except for she's dealing with extreme PTSD, but she becomes like a prepper type person. So she's got like her own obsession, which has destroyed her life in lots of ways. And so it's funny that certain people throughout the different timelines in the Halloween universe become just as laser focused and as obsessive as Michael Myers, but yet they do it in a different way. So it's like you've got like the avenging hero and then the villain, and that avenging hero has to sacrifice their whole entire identity and life to be that avenging hero because their whole identity is wrapped up in the boogeyman, really. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, Michael Myers really, when you look at the credits and everything like that, Michael Myers isn't even going by Michael Myers. Michael Myers goes by The Shape. Mm-hmm. And so Michael Myers is not supposed to be anything other than pure evil. Michael Myers is not supposed to be something you're supposed to relate to, someone you're supposed to like find empathy with or anything like that. So it's always interesting when the people that are trying to defeat Michael become like this laser focused, obsessed with him. And Dr. Loomis, that's his whole storyline throughout all of them, is trying to get people to really take him seriously and to really take what he's saying about who Michael Myers is seriously, because people just, they're like, this is a man. What are you talking about? And he's like, this is not a man. Mm-hmm. This is someone who doesn't have that. I tried for 8 years, which, my gosh, that's a long time to try to reach someone. Think mm-hmm. about that. That is a long, and he was probably there, like, who knows, like every day, every week. That's obsession. And that's mm-hmm. like, you could say it's dedication, but there comes a point where, I mean, why didn't you give up after 5 years? Why 8 years? And then you're like, wait, this person is unredeemable. They're evil. Whatever. I'm going to, you know, although he said when he first met him, he was looking at the devil's eyes, but you get the feeling probably what he did then was push that aside and say, no, I'm a doctor. I have to lead mm-hmm. with science. I think that's the other thing, is this is someone who's led with science their whole life. And then they're presented with something that almost contradicts science because mm-hmm. there's no understanding.
No explanation. This person.
That's why Rob Zombie's ones suck. I know some people love them. They'd be fine if they had nothing to do with Michael Myers, but...
You know, I'm one of those people where I'm just like, I really wish Rob Zombie would stop making movies. I don't care for them.
I think he's a really cool person.
Yes. Yes.
But and his wife, bless her heart, she's not a very good actress. I mean, I love how much he loves his wife, but
No, I agree. So I do like in this first one that, you know, he Michael Myers is pure evil. We don't get any answers, any explanations. That definitely makes your villain scarier and more threatening and like foreboding and everything because there's no rhyme or reason to it. And I do love that. I love not having the answers as much as I want answers to try and make it make sense. I also don't want to run into the chance of like sympathizing with a villain, although I'm totally capable. I love villains. I'm team villain 110%. Side note, my husband's replaying Red Dead Redemption 2, but as a good guy. And it's just so funny because he gets so mad. He's like, I can't even like loot dead bodies. Like, and I was like, see, being a good guy sucks. Have no fun. But I love that. I love that we don't get any answers, no explanation. We don't know why Michael is so hyper focused on Lori. He just is. And it's so fucking, and that is really, really scary. Like I said, no rhyme or reason, no motive, no methodology to it. Just super fucking random and hella dramatic. I love
The
it.
hella dramatic.
Because like there's also a point too where towards the end, and he's going after Lori, and after she like falls and lands like a cat on the stairs, and the way he stands at the top of the stairs, he comes around, he kind of stands, stops, and he like poses menacingly for a second, makes me giggle. I'm just like, oh my God, you're so cute, you're so scary.
You're so cute.
That moment, and it's like just kind of menacing, and it's just like, that's fun. So, like I said,
Course, what am I talking about? I collect Michael Myers stuff, so.
and I get it. I understand. Like he's for someone who never speaks and is very menacing in that sense, whereas, you know, Freddy, especially towards in the later movies, is cracking wise all the time and everything. Like it's, you know, and then like Jason, we kind of get that in an explanation and whatnot, whereas at least in this first one for Halloween, we don't get any of that. And I love it. And it makes him, like I said, just that much more scary and a good horror villain. So I appreciate that. So, okay, let's see. I've got a couple other things here jotted down. So I do like, okay, so earlier when you were talking about how Lori isn't as distracted as some of her friends and how, and so she notices Michael in all these moments. I also found it interesting that she's not only noticing him, but like doesn't really start reacting to him until she gets back home and she sees him kind of through the window, in between like the hanging laundry, and then poof, he's gone. It's like she's watching him the whole time and she doesn't see him like dip out. Like, I love it. But it wasn't until that moment where she like kind of slams the window and backs away quick. So now she's starting to pick up on it. So I love that, like all these other times he pops up outside the school when he drives by, standing behind the bush. She's just kind of like, huh, that's weird. I would be shitting my pants.
Weird.
Especially with the hiding behind that hedge and everything. So So I love that. I enjoyed that. I noticed that, this last time I was watching it this morning. I was like, she's really kind of unfazed by all of that. And just kind of like, well, I gotta get the pumpkin over to Tommy's and we're gonna carve it and we're gonna watch the thing from another planet. And which I love that they were watching that movie was playing on the TV in the background, because then, as we know, John Carpenter goes and makes his own version of the thing, which is so good. It's like my favorite.
I did want to throw out and that actually a little trivia that ties Robert Englund to this movie is Robert Englund recently said that he was hired to throw leaves on this. So he didn't know.
I did see that, and I thought that was kind of funny. And then I was like, because it's Illinois in October, and they've got the prop fall leaves. But then like the grass and every other tree is just like super green.
Yep. I know.
I
Well, I
love
was
it.
looking big time this time to see if I could, you know, because this, of course, was shot in California. So to see if I could see any kind of palm trees or anywhere. I've
Oh,
never caught those, but
okay.
yeah.
So they're good about hiding that. Oh, let's see. Oh, I didn't realize I was going to have to consult didthedogdie.com for this movie
Oh,
because
yeah.
the dog
Sorry.
dies. And also, like, Annie's kind of a terrible dog owner. Like, I know she's like, this dog hates me. I'm the only person this dog hates. When it's like barking outside and then it whimpers and then stops barking. And she's like, oh, I guess he got a hot date. Like, damn, you really hate that fucking dog. Cause that was not a hot date dog sound. That was ow dog sound.
Yeah.
So I was just like, holy shit.
Yeah, she doesn't care about that
Nope. And Lindsay doesn't care about anything else other than watching black and white horror movies in the dark. Because she kind of
Yes.
kept yelling at Lindsay for things, and Lindsay just wouldn't fucking move.
I love
I
Lindsay.
loved it. I was like, atta girl. Okay, let's see. Anything? I'm just going through my notes because I did jot several things down, so I want to make sure I get them all mentioned. Oh, one thing. Okay, so in every horror movie, there's always at least one moment, if not a handful, where the protagonist is trying to get away, like whether they're running up the stairs instead of down and out the front door, what have you. For me, in this movie, it's when Lori is struggling with the glass back patio door that has been, and she, like, there's a chair right there. You could have chucked it at
Smash it.
any time, like in the last 20 minutes that he's slow walking at you. And then, but, and I love that once he does get into the kitchen after punching through the door and then quickly stepping around the door with his hand still in it. That's a hilarious shot. I loved it. A sign that Lori is truly going to be a badass is that she breaks the plate glass with her hand, doesn't use anything else within her reach. Like I said, the chair. Just like, bam, like uses her fist to kind of punch through and knock the rake down and then get out the door. Oh, girl. So that was kind of like that had me screaming at the TV. Like, what are you doing? You're in it. There's a lot of hard throwable objects that will break
It's
a
true.
window.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like, classic. Are there any moments like that for you in this movie that still kind of get you screaming, like down the stairs or up the stairs or don't do that?
The one that I mentioned before, when you see, I mean, it's a double edge because I love the fact that you see Michael rise so slowly, but you are like, why? I never understand that. Why people, when they think they have the killer is, you know, out of the way and they're safe, why they just stay right there, or why they drop the knife? Like when she's on the couch and she
Yes.
throws the knife down, I'm like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
It is one of those where it's like, keep that weapon. You know, that's why I do appreciate that, you know, Dr. Loomis just shoots and shoots and shoots and shoots until he has no more bullets. I like that because to me, that's a lot more realistic in that situation than I'm just going to lay here on the couch and drop this knife to the side.
She kind of does that a couple of times where she just takes that moment to just like either try and catch her breath or just she just stops. And it's
Yeah.
like, oh, especially after, you know, all these years of horror movies, you're just like, no, keep running. You know, a couple more, just go over there and just stab them a few more times just to be sure. It's like when she's running
Yeah.
back to the house and wakes up Tommy and the boogeyman, you know, and he's following her after she gets him with the. No, so she gets into the house and she tells Tommy, you know, like, oh, go upstairs and hide, you know, blah, blah, it's the boogeyman. And then she just like, yeah, goes to the couch and sits down and she's like, why? And then Michael comes in through the back and then she stabs him with the knitting needle. And I love the way he drops to the floor. There's something about the way he does it. I don't know. I had laughed so hard, but she stabs him and then she continues to just kind of weep for a minute. And then goes upstairs, and they're like, oh, he's not dead yet. So I like that he has managed to fake her out three times and she still hasn't learned by the third time to maybe like not just sit there and cry. So I am interested to see how Lori kind of grows throughout the franchise, because, you know, here she's a teenager. She's a, you know, technically a kid. She's making these not smart decisions of just standing in a dark corner and crying so Michael can come out from the shadows and all of this, to becoming like a fierce badass, like, I'm sick of this shit kind of final woman. So her arc is it, because there's, like you said, a couple of different like timelines, storylines.
Well,
pretty consistent throughout.
Ugh. Kind of. I'm like,
yeah, you made a face and I was like, oh, okay, maybe not.
No. Well, the second one is basically a continuation. Like, it picks up right when this one ends. The second one is also known for the fact that that's when it becomes very much a slasher and very much like kill, 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 kill. And that takes place in a hospital. So she's taken to a hospital and she's actually not in it that she's in it, but kind of not as active until towards the end. And then you don't really, she's mentioned throughout. Well, the third one, of course, is separate. So if you're not looking at that. And then what happens is then there's a character, Jamie, who actually, this really could have been a really great, wonderful, amazing storyline, but I don't think they did that well with it. But Jamie is being raised by these other people, and you find out she's actually the daughter of Lori, and Lori is no longer around. And so there's that timeline. So you follow that. Jamie is like connected to Michael, and then Michael's there. And then Jamie, I don't want to get into everything that Jamie does because it's spoilery. And just for your sake, I mean, I wouldn't, not that I don't care about the listeners. It's just, these are really flippin' old movies. So it's
like, yeah. Yeah.
And then it ends up, and then you've got the one with Paul Rudd where it does this whole druid cult thing. And that one is so stupid. It's so stupid. And then you get to H2O. And so H2O is kind of like, H2O is basically like two and then H2O. So it's like the sequel to two in a way. So H2O, so basically you were missing the first two. And so H2O you've seen. So you know what Lori's like in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's killed off. But then when you go to 2018, that timeline is 2018 Halloween is a direct sequel to this first one. So you basically would be forgetting about the second one. And she's a very different person, but that's because it's decades later. And she's an alcoholic and a prepper, like I said, and a badass. And I love it personally because it's so much about trauma and what really happens to these people when they're dealing with that, and then they're survivors, what really would happen to a final girl years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what H2O was trying to do too. I think H2O is better than people give it credit for, but I also think 2018 handled it the best and also brought in some great characters. And I just really, I like that. That's my favorite timeline. Mm-hmm. I understand people will disagree, especially because they're like, wait, you like Michael Myers so much. How can you like Halloween Ends? Which that'll make sense when you watch it.
Okay. I might actually queue those up like today yet, because now that I feel like I've seen the first one, and with you being like, oh, you know, watching them on shuffle on Plex, it's like a choose your own adventure. I'm like, well, then shit, I don't need to sit and watch them in order. That saves me a hell of a lot of time.
Yeah, you don't have to, because it's totally is a choose your own adventure. It really is. It's like, that's why, I mean, the timeline is so messed up. If you were to watch them in order, it makes no flipping sense because they forget a bunch of things. And like I said, three has nothing to do with any of them. And that's grown a following now. People love that one. And there's actually shout outs to it in the Gordon Green timeline thing. But I would be really curious your thoughts on the 2018 one and then the Halloween Kills, because 2018 was actually, that one was like a critical success. It was very beloved, as was the first Halloween, as was the first Nightmare on Elm Street. But when you get to Halloween Kills, people are very divided on it because of certain things that happen in it and because of certain statements that the movie is making. And I think if you watch it and you realize, at least for me, you realize this is Michael's movie. This is Michael Myers' movie. First, the 2018, that's Laurie's movie. And then you got this one is Michael Myers' movie. And then the third one, I won't really say because it might give a little bit away. But so that's why, to me, it's a lot more harsher and colder and violent and you know, stuff. And there is a scene in Halloween Kills, and it doesn't involve Michael Myers, but there's a scene in Halloween Kills that brought me to almost to tears. It really was very difficult to watch. It's still difficult for me to watch it. I talked a lot about it on our podcast when we talked about the Halloween series. And that's the other thing I will mention is I love Halloween, and I love the Michael Myers character. One thing that I struggle with these movies, and this is the thing with a lot of horror movies, is the mental illness factor of it and the treatment of people in psychiatric facilities and the portrayal of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying there aren't, like, I'm fine that Michael Myers goes to a facility like that. It's the fact that any other person you see throughout this franchise in a mental health facility, in anything like that, they're always treated like they're all on this level of, like, not that they're not human, but that they don't know how to deal with the real world. And I'm not saying there aren't people that with mental illnesses like that, but to me, it kind of toes that line of not necessarily the most positive portrayal of people with mental illness. Although you could make the argument that because it deals so heavily with PTSD, that maybe that's counteracting that later on. But that's just one thing I just wanted to mention. So mm-hmm. Anyway, I keep going to all the other ones because it's hard for me to not just talk about the first one, I will admit, because I'm always thinking about the other ones just because this is my franchise, as messed up as the timelines are and everything. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street is my second favorite, but as messed up as the timelines are, I can't help it. It just kind of happens. So apologies.
No, understandable. I get it. It's hard when you're so familiar with a series or a franchise. It is difficult to only talk about, just to contain it to just one tiny piece of it. Mm-hmm. And considering this is truly, literally like the seed to the rest of the franchise and the way then that all branches out. I get it. So, and I appreciate your take on all the other different versions or all the sequels and everything, because like I said, this is only my second one. So I thought they were like a more of a continuous, you know, with the continuity and the timeline and everything. But now you're sitting here telling me like,
so bad about
all right,
it.
I need to watch 1, 2 and then like 14 and then 18 and then go back and watch 4 and 5 and then, but then 12 and then go back to 6. And then once I finish that, then I can watch 3.
there are a bunch of little charts you can get and you can see which timelines, because you could also do the Rob Zombie timeline if you really want to do. But so it's like that kind of it is. That's why I say it's a choose your own adventure, because it really is.
See, and I like that you put it that way, because I love the choose your own adventure books.
See, I kind of tried to put that way because I'm like, if you look at it that way, it's actually kind of cool. But I understand. There's such convoluted, it's a lot of, and there's a lot of junk thrown in. But I honestly think with a lot of these kind of movies, that happens where they want to add in different elements to maybe, I don't know, up the stakes or make it more interesting. And a lot of times that fails. I'm Trying to think if Friday the 13th really did that though, because to me, Friday the 13th, which is the series that I have the most, that I've always had the most issues with. Although when we covered it on my podcast, I gained a deeper appreciation from it because Susie, really, that's her favorite. And so, and Jason is her favorite. And so I gained a deeper appreciation of them. But to me, Friday the 13th never tries to go like, well, but I guess it kind of does. I don't know. I mean, well, then they go to space, that whole thing, Jason X, and oh my gosh. Or when Jason takes Manhattan, where he actually never gets to Manhattan, mostly it's on the boat.
It's like, I love okay. It. Yeah. I love horror franchises. They're fun.
And that one is so messed up with legality stuff. They've been trying to do ones with that forever. But they're doing a prequel series called Crystal Lake. Brian Fuller's developing that. I don't know if you heard that.
I might have seen a tweet or a retweet about it. Maybe, yeah, maybe Susie. I don't know. But interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And I think what I can really, really appreciate about this movie, Halloween, is that it's just kind of the simplicity in it, in the story. Mm-hmm. It's just you have an unhinged person that just wants to go kill. You don't get any answers as to why, no explanation, no attempts to sympathize or empathize or anything with him. And I love that.
Yeah.
It's just the simplicity. We don't always need these big twists and convoluted storylines, plot lines, timelines, universes, all of that. It's sometimes just like the simplest, you know, there's like a saying I like, keep it simple, stupid, kiss. Kiss it.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that about this movie, is not just for its time period, but because it's so simple in its horror, and it's not overly gory and graphic, and it's not like blood splatters all over and everything, which is fine. You know, I love gore and everything, but sometimes less is more. And I think for 1978, I think John Carpenter did a really good job capturing all of that in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And people believe that this is a very violent and gory movie, and it's not. I mean, they even on IMDb, it's like violence, gore, moderate. It's the same thing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre as well. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, I will never watch that movie again. I'm not saying it's not good. That was just, God, I felt like I needed a shower after that movie just because of the atmosphere and plus mm-hmm. the sticky Texas, which I know all the actors were sweating. Like, so that's another independent movie. Mm-hmm. But with that one, I think people believe that Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because, I mean, number one, the title, people believe that that's a very gory, violent, violent movie, and it actually really isn't. Mm-mm. And it's always surprising with those, but it feels like it is. It feels visceral. And I think to an extent you can say that about Halloween as well. And I think that has to do with the directing and the script and the music and the way it's set up and where you're expecting stuff that doesn't happen. Like, you're even expecting when he runs into the kid, you know, outside the playground, you're even, or outside the school, you're even expecting him to kill the kid, and he doesn't kill the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot of that where you're playing with your expectations. So then in your head, you're thinking of it as a much more violent movie than it is, because your mind is thinking, oh, well, this person is constantly violent. When in reality, you only see Michael kill like this, like actually see, I mean, you do see the body of the garage, the mechanic, but you don't actually see Michael kill that guy. So you only really see him kill Annie, kill Bob, kill PJ Soul's character. How am I forgetting her name?
Linda.
And yes. And so that's really all you see him kill. And that's mm-hmm. like, and his sister, of course. So it's like it's like four people in mm-hmm. a slasher, which is pretty, I mean, yes, the dogs too. I'm not forgetting about the dogs. I'm a dog person. So, but none of these killers are ever dog people. So,
and that's why they're killers.
Exactly. So really, he's not killing just indiscriminately. He's not just killing constantly. And that, I think, actually adds more to the tension and makes you feel like it's a lot more brutal than it actually is, if that makes sense there. But.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's see. I think I have hit about all of my rants, raves, faves, and everything. So before we move on to the Midwest goodbye, we'll do Stray Bubbles first. I've kind of moved that outside of the Midwest goodbye because I'm like, oh, that's a nice little preamble to that. So yeah, Stray Bubbles, last chance to bring up any notes, fun facts, any other rants, raves, faves, or gushes. So Aaron, do you have anything left?
I'm looking at my notes here. I know when we're done, I will, because my brain, like I said, apologies to everybody. Apologies for my mistakes and characters, because I know people get upset about that. But I have seen this 100 times. I just, trying to think if there's anything that I wanted to mention. I just always want to give a shout out to I think Halloween has one of the best opening credit sequences. I love the opening credit sequence with the pumpkin getting closer and closer and closer to the jack-o'-lantern, whatever. And I just have always loved that, always appreciated that. I think it's really, really good. I love the use of Don't Fear the Reaper. I really like the using that song. I think that goes really well. And I love the beginning, the first kill, when he first kills his sister. What I like about that is that the camera is from his point of view with the killing, and I just think that's interesting. And I like the fact that you see that in the first kill, but you never see that again. So, because it's like you're following his story for about 2 seconds, and then you go to the actual real story, which is, ends up being more Laurie's journey, and in a sense, Dr. Loomis's journey too. But so I think that's it. I love this movie. I love Michael Myers as a character. Laurie Strode is my favorite final girl. And I love Dr. Loomis. Love the score.
Love it, love
And
it.
I'm a David Gordon Green fan, timeline fan. That's my timeline. Okay. Going to end to hate that timeline right now, so I'm going to defend it, especially the
Right
final
on.
one. I love Halloween Ends the way it ends. I like that. I like the other storyline there that people have a problem with. I like it. So,
End of discussion, period. That is it.
that's it.
Oh, no, I love it. And I love that you love this movie that seems to be more universally panned and disliked, and that you see the good in it. So that really kind of makes me want to be like, really want to watch it even more. Where I'm like, well, my podcast Brain Twin loves it, so it's got to be good. There's got to
Well,
be good stuff
hopefully
to
you'll
it.
like it. I have no idea. Maybe I should have saved all this stuff for our
Oh, well, I'm sure we'll be able to throw in bits and stuff like that when we get to recording and start releasing those, which I'm very, very excited for. So, all right. So, couple of just last stray bubbles, random notes that I have. So dumb, but at the beginning, and Lori's leaving her house, and her dad's like, oh, you need to make sure you stop at the Myers house. His car is blocking the sidewalk, and that drives me nuts. Fuck disabled people, right? I'm sorry.
No, I agree. It's just
It's a weird thing to pick up on. I get that, but at the
no.
same time, I was like, dude, that's not okay. I don't care that you're supposed to be in Illinois. It's not supposed to be okay there either. So,
Yeah.
I love that the Myers house is like this decrepit piece of shit in the middle of all these nice houses. Like, fuck taking care of that house at all. Not even gonna try. So that's, I love it. 'Cause of course, like growing up, there was a house across the street from the elementary school that I went to, and it was just kind of like this abandoned, rundown house. in the middle of just like there's like a little bit of like timber around it, but then, you know, how homes all around it, you know, Midwest suburban homes and whatnot. So it was always the rumor in elementary school that it was haunted and all the stories that surrounded the house. And it was, I went there once with some friends and it was super creepy. And I was in like third grade and I was like, this is not okay. So I do, so that seeing the Myers house all run down in the middle of this neighborhood kind of reminded me of that. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So back in the day, there were those random abandoned houses kids would go play in. Cool.
Yeah.
And for 1978, I thought Tommy's bullies were lame as fuck. I expect more from my 1970s bullies. All right.
Wow.
So there's just some of my random ass notes that I jotted down.
I expect more from my 1970s bullies. Wow. Oh, now, I really will be curious to see some notes on this part of Halloween Kills then.
Oh, all right. One last one. The way Lori holds the joint. Bless her final girl heart. Oh, my God. She holds it so awkwardly. I love it.
It kills me about that, too. I'm like, I think Lori's right. There's no way that her father would not have smelled that in the car. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lori has a right to be worried. It seems like he didn't, but to me, that's not logical. He definitely would have smelled that in the car.
Oh, absolutely. I thought it was funny, too, where in that moment, you know, Lori's still looking at Annie's dad and making eye contact. I'm like, well, you're not high yet because you would not be able to do that. I'm just saying, if you're paranoid about the smell, ain't no way you're looking your friend's dad, who is a cop, in the eyes. He's standing right there. So I was like, that's fiction. All right. Well, that is it for my stray bubble. So we'll go ahead and move on to the Midwest goodbye. So this is where we'll spend the next like 40 minutes trying to wrap up this episode. And we'll go ahead and play a little game called, I like to call, the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage, where we will connect this movie to Nicolas Cage in 6 steps or less. Erin, how'd you do?
Well, like I was telling you before we started, I had to do this like right within like 2 minutes before we started. So, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot to do this. This is, it always happens, but I like mine. So I started with Jamie Lee Curtis. And Jamie Lee Curtis, of course, was in Knives Out with one of our greatest actors working, Michael Shannon. Michael Shannon was in this little movie called 99 Homes, which I do recommend, with Laura Dern, who, of course, was in Wild at Heart with Nicolas Cage.
I love that. I started going that same route.
Oh, really?
Including Michael Shannon. And then I got sidetracked, I think, with something else. And I was like, wait, what am I doing? So, oh, I love it. Very good. Yeah. I was doing Jamie, but, yep. Oh, see, that's the brain twin. All right. So I, of course, have two because, yeah. So this movie has PJ Souls, who was in the movie Carrie with John Travolta, who was Nicolas Cage in Con Air. And the other one that I have is, so obviously directed by John Carpenter, who also directed Escape from New York, that had Harry Dean Stanton in it, who is in Wild at Heart with Nicolas Cage.
Ah.
So. Awesome. And I know we didn't talk about it beforehand or anything, but on Erin's podcast, she likes to play a little game called the 6 degrees of Finn Wittrock, because Finn Wittrock.
Poor Finn, man.
is a ridiculously handsome actor, and he's also very, very good at his job. And and it's all Aaron's fault that I feel this way about this man.
It's all my fault.
It's all your fault. I mean, I also enabled. I didn't help any of it either. So, so as a surprise, I did do one of 6 degrees of Finn. I struggled. So I ended up, I did eventually have to hit up the Oracle of Bacon, where you can plug in the two actors to connect through the 6 degrees of separation. So So this was a little surprise for you. I wanted to surprise you with it.
Aww.
So this movie has Gwen Van Damme. I forgot which character she plays. But she was in, oh, I think she's uncredited in this movie. But she was in Big Boy Pants with Finn Wittrock.
Oh, I love
I knew
that.
you would.
Oh.
So I was, see, and I was just kind of curious. I was like, I wonder how I can get there. And then it became a Loomis level obsession where I was like, I need to figure this out. And then I couldn't. So then I had to enlist the help of another website. But when I saw that, I was like, all right, I got to do it. So
I love that because there is like a really like a quick way is Jamie Lee Curtis was in Ryan Murphy's show Scream Queens.
Yeah,
that's like the quickest. But and of course Finn Wittrock and Ryan Murphy. But I love that. That's so cool. That's aw. Thanks for that surprise.
Yeah, you're welcome. So all right, now we will move on to the what's been streaming in your bubble. So any streaming recs or anything you've been like obsessively watching lately?
Well, I am watching a lot of Billy Zane movies. We're going to be talking about Billy Zane on my podcast in July. And that man has had roles in a total of 173 movies and television shows. There's no way I'm getting to all of those. But if you want to find a bunch of Billy Zane content, 2B basically should just be called Billy Zane Central because... So I've been watching a lot of Billy Zane content. A lot of it isn't very good. poor Billy Zane. I mean, he was quoted as saying when his first marriage ended because of alimony, he had to keep doing like these really, he had to take basically any part that was offered him. But I did rewatch, yes, I rewatched Titanic, but that's not what I'm going to talk about. I did rewatch this great movie called Dead Calm with Nicole Kidman and Sam Neill. And it's, if you haven't seen this, please watch this movie. You can only rent it or go to your library. And it's from like 1989, I believe, or something. And it's like Billy Zane was like 20, I think, when he made this or something. And Nicole Kidman was only like 19. Like Sam Neill has said since then, it was really disturbing to me that we were playing a married couple. But Billy Zane is like, it's a on ship thing. I'm not going to say too much. It's a thriller horror movie. Love it. I've always loved it. That was the movie that made me Billy Zane fan. And I just, Billy Zane is such a unique, weird, eccentric person. And I really have been enjoying watching that. I did watch a very bizarre, like very twisted horror movie on Shudder called Spoonful of Sugar. I watched that last night. I don't know. I have to really process it because it's really sick and twisted. I want to make sure people know this. very sick and twisted. I did like the twist in it. And then I've been watching on Peacock. There's a new show called Based on a True Story, which is a dark comedy about true crime obsession. And it stars the best Chris Messina. And it's really funny and cute. And I like that. And then there is a Robert Englund, speaking of horror, there's a Robert Englund documentary that is on Screambox, which is another great horror streaming service. I think it's only like $4.99 a month or something. And there's also on there, there's another great documentary about Chucky called Living with Chucky, which I interviewed the director of that, she's the daughter of the makeup effects person who came on later in the series. And it's a really good documentary. And then please keep a lookout. I interviewed the director of this one. Please keep a lookout for probably the most important, one of the most important movies of this year, of our lifetime, Americond. It's a documentary all about capitalism and also about unions and all of that. And I really highly recommend that. So now I will stop.
No, I love it. I love the Rex. I will have to make sure and definitely keep, I will definitely keep an eye out for the Americon because that sounds really, really interesting.
It's so good.
I feel like, is it something that I'm going to be really mad at? Like every time I watch The Big Short, like I'm just still very, very mad by the end
Yes,
of it.
because it's real life,
Okay.
but
Yeah.
the
Yeah.
director is hopeful, so there's some hopeful elements to it, but it will piss you off and infuriate you. It made me cry too, so I
Oh.
don't
Oh, well, I'm a sucker for anything that just causes like strong emotional reactions, good or bad. So, speaking of strong emotional reactions, we finished watching The Bear on Hulu the other night, my husband and I, and I, oh my God, that show was so fucking good. I totally get it. And for some reason I thought season two was already out. So when season one ended and it didn't connect, I was like, damn it. But that penultimate episode where they get a shitload of like pre-orders, and it had to have been one of the most stressful episodes of television I have ever watched that does not involve like sci-fi, fantasy, horror, anything like that. Just something of like an everyday, almost I hate to say the word mundane, but it's so plausible. It's so possible. And I'm sure it's happened in kitchens before where they are not prepared for certain things, or too many people show up for a banquet and they are rushing in the back. And my husband has, he's at like, he's worked in the kitchen before. He has like 16 years experience. And so I was asking him, I was like, does this kind of take you back to, you know, because he did banquets for a while when he worked for one of the hotels. And he's like, oh, yes. So not to that level and all that intense and the screaming and the chaos. It was beautifully done and I loved it. I can't stop thinking about it. Just how stressed that got. My butt cheeks were so clenched for like that 20 minutes. Because it's not a long episode, I don't think, but it was so well done. I love the acting. I love the cast. I love these characters, even Richie, as much as he fucking stresses me out. I love a good screaming character sometimes, as terrible as they can be. It's so fucking good. So I'm excited for season two, whenever that's, who knows when we'll get any new seasons of anything at this point, but so fucking good.
Yeah, I
Loved,
haven't watched it
loved
yet.
it. Oh yeah, I really enjoyed it. And there was in an earlier episode, there's a moment where the main character Carmen, played by Jeremy Allen White, it's a bit of a monologue and it's kind of a close-up shot, and he's talking about very difficult things and just the face acting, the emotions, and it's like it was so fucking good, just that intimate shot of kind of that close-up and him describing and talking about all his feelings and the trauma, and it was beautiful. Loved it. So no one, if y'all haven't watched it yet, if you're late to the bear party like I was, get on it. So, and I kept calling it The Menu, and my husband's like, no, this is not. I was like, it's like The Menu, but without the So, all right. And then other than that, we've been watching just some random stuff. My husband likes a lot of the stuff that was on Discovery Plus. We call his show Stinkers and my show's Thinkers. So, because he likes like Gold Rush and Deadliest Catch and all those fucking shows. So he's been watching those when he can. And I will have to say that I have kind of been enjoying the new Max app. I don't like that it's called Max because it should have stayed HBO at the very least. Because there was once a Max, Cinemax, aka Skinemax.
Yeah.
Anyway. I do like that his stinkers and my stinkers are all in one convenient location. I'm also very, very mad at Netflix right now. So I'm like, I feel like that's also pushing me towards the Max app and everything. So, oh,
I can't call it that yet. I will not. I refuse to.
I understand. I
I
understand.
refuse to.
They
No.
really, they should have still just gone with HBO ovaries or
That's what you would, yeah, I
Discovery.
remember
Yeah.
you said that. HBO ovaries. I like
Yeah.
that.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to do it for us today. So, of course, I have to thank once again my lovely podcast brain twin, Erin, for joining me. And make sure you guys check out her podcast. It's a Fandom Thing pod, which can be found on like all the podcast players.
Yep. Even the ones Jen doesn't like.
I don't understand. They're just assholes at this point. I love
it. They probably heard you bad mouthing them and they're like,
probably. Well, they shouldn't have rejected my first three attempts.
We'll see what happens with our podcast and see if it ends up on Pandora. That'll be the real test.
Oh, we're not going to get on there because I'm attached to it. So, So make sure you check out one or 12 of her episodes. There are some great, amazing interviews on there. And just really great episodes in general. One that I listened to, it's been a few weeks now, but the racism in sci-fi and fantasy. Great fucking episode. I absolutely loved it. Everything everyone was pointing out about Firefly, I was like, I felt so dumb because I'm like, I never really noticed and now I feel bad and they're ruining my favorite show, but not really. No, it was a roller coaster of emotions, but it was so good. And I'm just like, well, no lies detected, all valid points. So I always kind of appreciate getting that extra perspective on things that I may have probably missed. So that was very, very good. I highly recommend that. And any episode that I've been on, obviously.
Obviously. Well, thank you, though. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. So, and I always have to thank my lovely Bubblies for listening today. Thank you so much. And until next time.
But do I get to give where you can find the
podcast? Yes, I'm sorry. I do this to you every time.
You're really about to do it again.
Oh, God. It's now our bit. Oh, my God. I can't wait till we start our new podcast. And I botched the closing on that one, too.
I'm like, wait a minute. I wanted to.
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So, take two.
So, yes, like Jen said, you can find us everywhere, including Pandora at It's a Fandom Thing. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/itsafandomthingpod, on Twitter at fandomthingpod, no it's in that one, on Instagram at itsafandomthingpod, on TikTok at itsafandomthingpod, and our website is itsafandomthingpod.com. And yes, we have a lot we're doing. I don't know when this is going to drop, but we're doing Pride Month right now. So if you like Queer as Folk, we cover that every single year. We also just did our Flag Means Death, so which was a new watch for me. And then like I said, we're going to be talking about Billy Zane soon. We're also going to be talking about David Bowie, Trent Reznor. We're going to talk about Yellowjackets soon, and Jen's going to be on that too. So that's some of the ones. And then if you end up liking our podcast so much, you want to support us monetarily and you become a Patreon supporter, you can hear Jen talk about a Nicolas Cage flick, Renfield, which will be, that episode will be out for Patreon subscribers by the time this drops. So come follow us. Now I don't even know how to end what I'm saying.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Forget about me every time.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. How many times I write it out, you know what? I don't read it. Fuck it. What's the point? I don't get it. But now it's like, now I feel like I have to keep it up because I feel like now it's like our thing. It's our bit.
It's a bit. Yeah.
That's what I'm going with. It was intentional because it's a bit. So, all right. On that note, this time for realsies, thank you all for listening and keep streaming. Bye.
If you're enjoying this podcast, be sure to let me know by rating and reviewing wherever you get your podcast fix. Follow me on Twitter at Streaming Bubble. Find me on Facebook and Instagram as My Streaming Bubble. Have thoughts, suggestions, questions, or want to be tolerated? Email me at mystreamingbubble@gmail.com. If you want to show your love and support for this little old podcast in monetary form, search My Streaming Bubble over at buymeacoffee.com and buy me a cheese wedge. And if you want to take that love and support to the next level, head over to Redbubble, where you can find and purchase My Streaming Bubble merch. All monetary support goes right back into this podcast from new recording equipment to Night Cheese. Thanks for your support and keep streaming.